Both of them give a little jump and look like they had never expected it, and then like they had. Then the Duke says,
"What, all of them?"
"No, leastways not all at once. That is, I don't think I ever see them all come out at once but just one time."
"Hello, when was that?"
"Well, it was the day we had the funeral, in the morning. It weren't early because I overslept. I was just starting down the ladder and I see them."
"Well, go on, go on. What did they do? How'd they act?"
"They didn't do nothing. And they didn't act anyway, much, as far as I see. They tiptoed away, so I seen easy enough that they'd shoved in there to do up your majesty's room or something, supposing you was up, and found you weren't up, and so they was hoping to slide out of the way of trouble without waking you up, if they hadn't already waked you up."
"Great guns! This is a go," says the king,
and both of them looked pretty sick and tolerable silly. They stood there thinking and scratching their heads a minute, and then the Duke, he bust into a kind of little raspy chuckle and says,
"It does beat all. How neat the niggers played their hand. They let on to be sorry they was going out of this region, and I believe they was sorry. And so did you, and so did everybody. Don't ever tell me any more that a nigger ain't got any histrionic talent. Why, the way they played that thing, it would fool anybody. In my opinion, there's a fortune in 'em. If I had capital in a theater, I wouldn't want a better layout than that. And here we've gone and sold 'em for a song. Yes, and ain't privileged to sing the song yet. Say, where is that song, that draft?"
"In the bank for it to be collected. Where would it be?"
"Well, that's all right then, thank goodness," says I, kind of timid-like. "Is something gone wrong?"
The king whirls on me and rips out,
"None of your business. You keep your head shit and mind your own affairs if you got any. Long as you're in this town, and don't you forget that, you hear?"
Then he says to the Duke,
"We got to just swaller it and say nothing. Mum's the word for us."
As they was starting down the ladder, the Duke, he chuckles again and says,
"Quick sales and small profits. It's a good business, yes."
The king snarls around on him and says,
"I was trying to do for the best in selling them out so quick. If the profits has turned out to be none, lacking considerable, and none to carry, is it my fault any more than it's yourn?"
"Well, they'd be in the house yet, and we wouldn't if I could have got my advice listened to."
The king sassed back as much as was safe for him, and then swapped around and lit into me again. He give me down the banks for not coming and telling him I see the niggers come out of his room acting that way. Said any fool would have knowed something was up. And then waltzed in and cussed himself a while, and said it all come of him not laying late and taking his natural rest that morning, and he'd be blamed if he'd ever do it again. So they went off a-jawing, and I felt dreadful glad I'd worked it all off onto the niggers and yet hadn't done the niggers no harm by it. Chapter 28. By and by, it was getting up time, so I come down the ladder and started for downstairs. But as I come to the girls' room, the door was open, and I see Mary Jane setting by her old hair trunk, which was open, and she'd been packing things in it, getting ready to go to England. But she had stopped now, with a folded gown in her lap, and had her face in her hands, crying. I felt awful bad to see it. Of course anybody would. I went in there and says, "Miss Mary Jane, you can't abear to see people in trouble, and I can't, most always. Tell me about it." So she done it, and it was the niggers. I just expected it. She said the beautiful trip to England was most about spoiled for her. She didn't know how she was ever going to be happy there, knowing the mother and the children weren't ever going to see each other no more. And then busted out bitterer than ever and flung up her hands and says,
"Oh, dear, dear. To think they ain't ever going to see each other any more."
"But they will, and inside of 2 weeks, and I know it," says I. Laws, it was out before I could think. And before I could budge, she throws her arms around my neck and told me to say it again. Say it again! Say it again! I see I had spoken too sudden and said too much and was in a close place. I asked her to let me think a minute, and she sat there very impatient and excited and handsome, but looking kind of happy and eased up, like a person that's had a tooth pulled out. So I went to studying it out. I says to myself, I reckon a body that ups and tells the truth when he is in a top place is taking considerable many risks, though I ain't had no experience and can't say for certain. But it looks so to me, anyway. And yet here's a case where I'm blessed if it don't look to me like the truth is better and actually safer than a lie. I must lay it by in my mind and think it over some time or other. It's so kind of strange and unregular. I never seen nothing like it. Well, I says to myself at last, I'm a-going to chance it. I'll up and tell the truth this time, though it does seem most like setting down on a keg of powder and touching it off just to see where you'll go to. Then I says, Miss Mary Jane, is there any place out of town a little ways where you could go and stay 3 or 4 days? Yes, Mr. Lothrop's. Why? Never mind why yet. If I'll tell you how I know the niggers will see each other again, inside of 2 weeks, here in this house, and prove how I know it, will you go to Mr. Lothrop's and stay 4 days? 4 days, she says. I'll stay a year. All right, I says. I don't want nothing more out of you than just your word. I'd rather have it than another man's kiss the Bible. She smiled and reddened up very sweet, and I says, If you don't mind it, I'll shut the door and bolt it. Then I come back and sit down again and says, Don't you holler. Just sit still and take it like a man. I got to tell the truth, and you want to brace up, Miss Mary, because it's a bad kind and going to be hard to take. But there ain't no help for it. These uncles of yourn ain't no uncles at all. They're a couple of frauds, regular deadbeats. There, now we're over the worst of it. You can stand the rest middling easy. It jolted her up like everything, of course. But I was over the shoal water now, so I went right along, her eyes a-blazing higher and higher all the time, and told her every blamed thing, from where we first struck that young fool going up the steamboat, clear through to where she flung herself onto the king's breast at the front door, and he kissed her 16 or 17 times. And then up she jumps, with her face afire like sunset, and says, The brute! Come, don't waste a minute, not a second! We'll have them tarred and feathered and flung in the river! Says I. Certainly, but do you mean before you go to Mr. Lothrop's, or— Oh, she says. What am I thinking about? She says, and sat right down again. Don't mind what I said. Please don't. You won't now, will you? Laying her silky hand on mine in that kind of a way that I said I would die first. I never thought. I was so stirred up, she says. Now go on, and I won't do so any more. You tell me what to do, and whatever you say, I'll do it. Well, I says, it's a rough gang, them two frauds, and I'm thick, so I got to travel with them a while longer, whether I want to or not. I'd rather not tell you why. And if you was to blow on them, this town would get me out of their claws, and I'd be all right, but there'd be another person that you don't know about who'd be in big trouble. Well, we got to save him, hain't we? Of course. Well, then we won't blow on them. Saying them words put a good idea in my head. I see how maybe I could get me and Jim rid of the frauds, get them jailed here and then leave. But I didn't want to run the raft in daytime without anybody aboard to answer questions but me. So I didn't want the plan to begin work until pretty late tonight. I says, Miss Mary Jane, I'll tell you what we'll do, and you won't have to stay at Mr. Lothrop so long, nuther. How fur is it?
A little short of 4 miles. Right out in the country back here.
Well, that'll answer. Now you go along out there and lay low till 9 or 9:30 tonight, and then get them to fetch you home again. Tell them you've thought of something. If you get here before 11, put a candle in this window, and if I don't turn up, wait till 11, and then if I don't turn up, it means I'm gone and out of the way and safe. Then you come out and spread the news around and get these beats jailed.
Good, she says. I'll do it.
And if it just happens so that I don't get away, but get took up along with them, you must up and say I told you the whole thing beforehand, and you must stand by me all you can.
Stand by you? Indeed I will. They shan't touch a hair of your head, she says.
And I see her nostrils spread and her eyes snap when she said it, too. If I get away, I shan't be here, I says, to prove these rapscallions ain't your uncles, and I couldn't do it if I was here. I could swear they was beats and bummers, that's all, though that's worth something. Well, there's others that can do that better than what I can, and they're people that ain't going to be doubted as quick as I'd be. I'll tell you how to find them. Give me a pencil and a piece of paper. There. Royal Nonsuch, Bricksville. Put it away, and don't lose it. When the court wants to find out something about these two, let them send up to Bricksville and say they've got the men that played the Royal Nonsuch and ask for some witnesses. Why, you'll have that entire town down here before you can hardly wink, Miss Mary. And they'll come a-bilin', too. I judge we had got everything fixed about right now, so I says, just let the auction go right along and don't worry. Nobody don't have to pay for the things they buy till a whole day after the auction on account of the short notice, and they ain't going out of this till they get that money. And the way we've fixed it, the sale ain't going to count, and they ain't going to get no money. It's just like the way it was with the niggers. It weren't no sale, and the niggers will be back before long. Why, they can't collect the money for the niggers yet. They're in the worst kind of fix, Miss Mary.
Well, she says, I'll run down to breakfast now, and then I'll start straight for Mr. Lothrop's.
Deed, that ain't the ticket, Miss Mary Jane, I says. By no manner of means, go before breakfast.
Why?
What did you reckon I wanted you to go at all for, Miss Mary?
Well, I never thought, and come to think, I don't know. What was it?
Why, it's because you ain't one of these leather-faced people. I don't want no better book than what your face is. A body can set down and read it off like coarse print. Do you reckon you can go and face your uncles when they come to kiss you good morning and never?
There, there, don't. Yes, I'll go before breakfast. I'll be glad to. And leave my sisters with them?
Yes, never mind about them. They've got to stand it yet a while. They might suspicion something if all of you was to go. I don't want you to see them, nor your sisters, nor nobody in this town. If a neighbor was to ask how is your uncles this morning, your face would tell something. No, you go right along, Miss Mary Jane, and I'll fix it with all of them. I'll tell Miss Susan to give your love to your uncles and say you've went away for a few hours for to get a little rest and change, or to see a friend, and you'll be back tonight or early in the morning.
Gone to see a friend is all right, but I won't have my love given to them.
Well, then it shan't be. It was well enough to tell her so. No harm in it. It was only a little thing to do, and no trouble. And it's the little things that smooths people's roads the most, down here below. It would make Mary Jane comfortable, and it wouldn't cost nothing. Then I says, there's one more thing. That bag of money.
Well, they've got that, and it makes me feel pretty silly to think how they got it.
No, you're out there. They ain't got it.
Why, who's got it?
I wish I knowed. But I don't. I had it because I stole it from them, and I stole it to give to you, and I know where I hid it, but I'm afraid it ain't there no more. I'm awful sorry, Miss Mary Jane. I'm just as sorry as I can be, but I done the best I could. I did, honest. I come nigh getting caught, and I had to shove it into the first place I come to and run, and it weren't a good place.
Oh, stop blaming yourself. It's too bad to do it, and I won't allow it. You couldn't help it. It wasn't your fault. Where did you hide it?
I didn't want to set her to thinking about her troubles again, and I couldn't seem to get my mouth to tell her what would make her see that corpse laying in the coffin with that bag of money on her stomach. So for a minute I didn't say nothing. Then I says, I'd rather not tell you where I put it, Miss Mary Jane, if you don't mind letting me off. But I'll write it for you on a piece of paper, and you can read it along the road to Mr. Lothrop's, if you want to. Do you reckon that'll do?
Oh, yes.
So I wrote. I put it in the coffin. It was in there when you was crying there, away in the night. I was behind the door, and I was mighty sorry for you, Miss Mary Jane. It made my eyes water a little to remember her crying there all by herself in the night, and them devils laying there right under her own roof, shaming her and robbing her. And when I folded it up and give it to her, I see the water come into her eyes, too. And she shook me by the hand hard and says, "Goodbye. I'm going to do everything just as you've told me, and if I don't ever see you again, I shan't never forget you. And I'll think of you a many and a many a time, and I'll pray for you, too." And she was gone. Pray for me. I reckoned if she knowed me, she'd take a job that was more nearer her size. But I bet she'd done it just the same. She was just that kind. She had the grit to pray for Judas if she took the notion. There weren't no back down to her, I judge. You may say what you want to, but in my opinion, she had more sand in her than any girl I ever see. In my opinion, she was just full of sand. It sounds like flattery, but it ain't no flattery. And when it comes to beauty, and goodness too, she lays over them all. I ain't ever seen her since that time that I see her go out of that door. No, I ain't ever seen her since, but I reckon I've thought of her a many and a many a million times, and of her saying she would pray for me. And if ever I'd thought it would do any good for me to pray for her, blamed if I wouldn't have done it or bust. Well, Mary Jane, she lit out the back way, I reckon, because nobody see her go. When I struck Susan in the hare lip, I says, "What's the name of them people over on the other side of the river that you all goes to see sometimes?" They says, "There's several, but it's the Proctors mainly." "That's the name," I says. "I most forgot it. Well, Miss Mary Jane, she told me to tell you she's gone over there in a dreadful hurry. One of them sick."
"Which one?"
"I don't know. Leastways, I kind of forgot, but I think it's..."
"Sakes alive, I hope it ain't Hanner."
"I'm sorry to say it," I says, "but Hanner's the very one."
"My goodness, and she's so well only last week. Is she took bad?"
"It ain't no name for it. They sat up with her all night, Miss Mary Jane said, and they don't think she'll last many hours."
"Only think of that now. What's the matter with her?"
I couldn't think of anything reasonable right off that way, so I says, "Mumps."
"Mumps your Grammy. They don't set up with people that's got the mumps."
"They don't they? You better bet they do with these mumps. These mumps is different. It's a new kind, Miss Mary Jane said."
"How's it a new kind?"
"Because it's mixed up with other things."
"What other things?"
"Well, measles, and whooping cough, and erysipelas, and consumption, and yallergenders, and brain fever, and I don't know what all."
"My land! And they call it the mumps?"
"That's what Miss Mary Jane said."
"Well, what in the nation do they call it the mumps for?"
"Why, because it is the mumps. That's what it starts with."
"Well, there ain't no sense in it. A body might stump his toe, and take pison, and fall down the well, and break his neck, and bust his brains out, and somebody come along and ask what killed him, and some numbskull up and say, 'Why, he stumped his toe.' Would there be any sense in that? No. And there ain't no sense in this, nuther. Is it catching?"
"Is it catching? Well, how you talk? Is a harrow catching? In the dark? If you don't hitch on to one tooth, you're bound to on another, ain't you? And you can't get away with that tooth without fetching the whole harrow along, can you? Well, these kind of mumps is a kind of a harrow, as you might say. And it ain't no slouch of a harrow, nuther. You come to get it hitched on good."
"Well, it's awful, I think," says the hare lip. "I'll go to Uncle Harvey and..."
"Oh, yes," I says. "I would. Of course I would. I wouldn't lose no time."
"Well, why wouldn't you?"
"Just look at it a minute, and maybe you can see. Ain't your uncles obliged to get along home to England as fast as they can? And do you reckon they'd be mean enough to go off and leave you to go all that journey by yourselves? You know they'll wait for you. So far, so good. Your Uncle Harvey's a preacher, ain't he? Very well, then. Is a preacher going to deceive a steamboat clerk? Is he going to deceive a ship clerk so as to get them to let Miss Mary Jane go aboard? Now you know he ain't. What will he do then? Why, he'll say, it's a great pity, but my church matters has got to get along the best way they can, for my niece has been exposed to the dreadful pluribus unum mumps. And so it's my bounden duty to sit down here and wait the 3 months it takes to show on her if she's got it. But never mind if you think it's best to tell your Uncle Harvey.
Shucks! And stay fooling around here when we could all be having good times in England whilst we was waiting to find out whether Mary Jane's got it or not? Why, you talk like a muggins.
Well, anyway, maybe you better tell some of the neighbors.
Listen at that now. You do beat all for natural stupidness. Can't you see that they'd go and tell? There ain't no way but just to not tell anybody at all.
Well, maybe you're right. Yes, I judge you all right.
But I reckon we ought to tell Uncle Harvey she's gone out a while anyway, so he won't be uneasy about her.
Yes, Miss Mary Jane, she wanted you to do that. She says, tell them to give Uncle Harvey and William my love and a kiss, and say I've run over to the river to see Mr. What is the name of that rich family your Uncle Peter used to think so much of? I mean the one that...
Why, you must mean the Apthorps, ain't it?
Of course. Bother them kind of names. A body can't ever seem to remember them half the time somehow. Yes, she said say she has run over for to ask the Apthorps to be sure to come to auction and buy this house, because she allowed her Uncle Peter would rather they had it than anybody else. And she's going to stick to them till they say they'll come, and then if she ain't too tired, she's coming home. And if she is, she'll be home in the morning anyway. She said don't say nothing about the Proctors, but only about the Apthorps, which'll be perfectly true because she is going there to speak about their buying the house. I know it because she told me so herself.
All right, they said, and cleared out to lay for their uncles and give them the love and the kisses and tell them the message.
Everything was all right now. The girls wouldn't say nothing because they wanted to go to England, and the King and the Duke would rather Mary Jane was off working for the auction than around in reach of Dr. Robinson. I felt very good. I judged I'd done it pretty neat. I reckon Tom Sawyer couldn't have done it no neater himself. Of course, he would have throwed more style into it, but I can't do that very handy, not being brung up to it. Well, they held the auction in the public square, along towards the end of the afternoon, and it strung along and strung along, and the old man, he was on hand, and looking his level piousest, up there alongside of the auctioneer, and chipping in a little scripture now and then, or a little goody-goody saying of some kind. And the Duke, he was around goo-gooing for sympathy all he knowed how, and just spreading himself generally. But by and by the thing dragged through, and everything was sold. Everything but a little old trifling lot in the graveyard. So they'd got to work that off. I'll never see such a giraffe as the King was for wanting to swallow everything. Well, whilst they was at it, a steamboat landed, and in about 2 minutes up comes a crowd of whooping and a yelling and a laughing and a carrying on and singing out, "Here's your opposition line! Here's your two sets of heirs to old Peter Wilkes, and you pays your money and you takes your choice!" Chapter 29. They was fetching a very nice-looking old gentleman along, and a nice-looking younger one, with his right arm in a sling. And my souls, how the people yelled and laughed and kept it up. But I didn't see no joke about it, and I judged it would strain the Duke and the King some to see any. I reckon they'd turn pale. But no, nary a pale did they turn. The Duke, he never let on he suspicioned what was up, but just went a goo-gooing around, happy and satisfied, like a jug that's googling out buttermilk. And as for the King, he just gazed and gazed down sorrowful on them newcomers, like it give him the stomach ache in his very heart to think there could be such frauds and rascals in the world. Oh, he done it admirable. Lots of the principal people gathered around the King to let him see they was on his side. That old gentleman that had just come looked all puzzled to death. Pretty soon he begun to speak, and I see straight off he pronounced like an Englishman, not the King's way, though the King's was pretty good for an imitation. I can't give the old gent's words, nor I can't imitate him, but he turned around to the crowd and says about like this, This is a surprise to me which I wasn't looking for, and I'll acknowledge candid and frank, I ain't very well fixed to meet it and answer it. For my brother and me has had misfortunes. He's broke his arm and our baggage got put off a town above here, last night in the night by a mistake. I am Peter Wilkes's brother Harvey, and this is his brother William, which can't hear nor speak, and can't even make signs to amount to much, now that he's only got one hand to work them with. We are who we say we are, and in a day or two, when I get the baggage, I can prove it. But up till then, I won't say nothing more, but go to the hotel and wait. So him and the new dummy started off, and the king, he laughs and blethers out,
"Broke his arm. Very likely, ain't it? And very convenient, too, for a fraud that's got to make signs and hain't learnt how. Lost their baggage. That's mighty good and mighty ingenious under the circumstances."
So he laughed again, and so did everybody else, except three or four, or maybe half a dozen. One of these was that doctor. Another one was a sharp-looking gentleman with a carpet bag of the old-fashioned kind, made out of carpet stuff, that had just come off of the steamboat and was talking to him in a low voice, and glancing toward the king now and then and nodding their heads. It was Levi Bell, the lawyer that was gone up to Louisville, and another one was a big rough husky that come along and listened to all the old gentleman said, and was listening to the king now. And when the king got done, this husky up and says,
"Say, looky here. If you are Harvey Wilkes, when'd you come to this town?"
"The day before the funeral, friend," says the king.
"But what time of day?"
"In the evening, about an hour or two before sundown."
"How'd you come?"
"I come down on the Susan Powell from Cincinnati."
"Well, then how'd you come to be up at the Pint in the morning in a canoe?"
"I weren't up at the Pint in the morning. It's a lie."
Several of them jumped for him and begged him not to talk that way to an old man and a preacher.
"Preacher be hanged. He's a fraud and a liar. He was up at the Pint that morning. I live up there, don't I? Well, I was up there, and he was up there. I see him there. He come in a canoe, along with Tim Collins and a boy."
The doctor, he up and says,
"Would you know the boy again if you was to see him, Hines?"
"I reckon I would, but I don't know."
"Why, yonder he is now. I know him perfectly easy."
It was me he pointed at. The doctor says,
"Neighbors, I don't know whether the new couple is frauds or not. But if these two ain't frauds, I'm an idiot, that's all. I think it's our duty to see that they don't get away from here till we've looked into this thing. Come along, Hines. Come along, the rest of you. We'll take these fellows to the tavern and affront them with the other couple, and I reckon we'll find out something before we get through."
It was nuts for the crowd, though maybe not for the king's friends, so we all started. It was about sundown. The doctor, he led me along by the hand and was plenty kind enough, but he never let go my hand. We all got in a big room in the hotel and lit up some candles and fetched in the new couple. First the doctor says,
"I don't wish to be too hard on these two men, but I think they're frauds, and they may have complices that we don't know nothing about. If they have, won't the complices get away with that bag of gold Peter Wilkes left?"
"It ain't unlikely. If these men ain't frauds, they won't object to sending for that money and letting us keep it till they prove they're all right. Ain't that so?"
Everybody agreed to that. So I judged they had our gang in a pretty top place right at the outstart. But the king, he only looked sorrowful and says,
"Gentlemen, I wish the money was there, for I ain't got no disposition to throw anything in the way of a fair, open, out-and-out investigation o' this miserable business. But alas, the money ain't there. You can send and see if you want to."
"Where is it, then?"
"Well,
When my niece gave it to me to keep for her, I took and hid it inside of the straw tick in my bed, not wishing to bank it for the few days we'd be here, and considering the bed a safe place, we not being used to niggers, and supposing them honest like servants in England. The nigger stole it the very next morning, after I had went downstairs, and when I sold them, I hadn't missed the money yet, so they got clean away with it. My servant here can tell you about it, gentlemen.
The doctor and several said shucks, and I see nobody didn't altogether believe him. One man asked me if I see the nigger steal it. I said no, but I see them sneaking out of the room and hustling away, and I never thought nothing. Only I reckon they was afraid they had waked up my master and was trying to get away before he made trouble with them. That was all they asked me. Then the doctor whirls on me and says, "Are you English, too?" I says yes, and him and some others laughed and said, "Stuff." Well, then they sailed in on the general investigation, and there we had it. Up and down, hour in, hour out, and nobody never said a word about supper, nor ever seemed to think about it. And so they kept it up, and kept it up, and it was the worst mixed-up thing you ever see. They made the king tell his yarn, and they made the old gentleman tell his'n, and anybody but a lot of prejudiced chuckleheads would have seen that the old gentleman was spinning truth and to other one lies. And by, they had me up to tell what I knowed. The king, he give me a left-handed look out of the corner of his eye, and so I knowed enough to talk on the right side. I begun to tell about Sheffield, and how we lived there, and all about the English Wilkses and so on. But I didn't get pretty fur till the doctor begun to laugh, and Levi Bell, the lawyer, says, "Set down, my boy. I wouldn't strain myself if I was you. I reckon you ain't used to lying. It don't seem to come handy. What you want is practice. You do it pretty awkward." I didn't care nothing for the compliment, but I was glad to be let off anyway. The doctor, he started to say something, and turns and says, "If you'd been in town at first, Levi Bell..." The king broke in and reached out his hand, and he says,
"Why, is this my poor dead brother's old friend that he's wrote so often about?"
The lawyer and him shook hands, and the lawyer smiled and looked pleased, and they talked right along a while, and then got to one side and talked low. And at last the lawyer speaks up and says,
"That'll fix it. I'll take the order and send it, along with your brothers, and then they'll know it's all right."
So they got some paper and a pen, and the king, he sat down and twisted his head to one side, and chawed his tongue and scrawled off something. And then he gave the pen to the duke, and then, for the first time, the duke looked sick. But he took the pen and wrote. So then the lawyer turns to the new old gentleman and says,
"You and your brother, please write a line or two and sign your names."
The old gentleman wrote, but nobody couldn't read it. The lawyer looked powerful astonished and says,
"Well, it beats me,"
and snaked a lot of old letters out of his pocket and examined them, and then examined the old man's writing, and then them again, and then says,
"These old letters is from Harvey Wilkes, and here's these two's handwritings, and anybody can see they didn't write them."
The king and the duke looked sold and foolish, I tell you, to see how the lawyer had took them in.
"And here's this old gentleman's handwriting, and anybody can tell, easy enough, he didn't write them. Fact is, the scratches he makes ain't properly writing at all. Now here's some letters from..."
The new old gentleman says,
"If you please, let me explain. Nobody can read my hand but my brother there, so he copies for me. It's his hand you've got there, not mine." "Well," says the lawyer, "this is a state of things. I've got some of William's letters, too, so if you'll get him to write a line or so, we can come..."
"He can't write with his left hand," says the old gentleman.
"If he could use his right hand, you would see that he wrote his own letters and mine, too. Look at both, please. They're by the same hand."
The lawyer done it and says,
"I believe it's so. And if it ain't so, there's a heap stronger resemblance than I'd noticed before, anyway." "Well, well, well. I thought we was right on the track of a solution, but it's gone to grass, partly. But anyway,
one thing is proved. These two ain't either of 'em Wilkes's. And he wagged his head towards the king and the duke. Well, what do you think? That mule-headed old fool wouldn't give in then. Indeed he wouldn't. Said it weren't no fair test. Said his brother William was the cussedest joker in the world and hadn't tried to write. He see William was going to play one of his jokes the minute he put the pen to paper. And so he warmed up and went to warbling and warbling right along till he was actually beginning to believe what he was saying himself. But pretty soon the new old gentleman broke in and says, I've thought of something. Is there anybody here that helped to lay out my helped to lay out the late Peter Wilkes for burying? Yes, says somebody. Me and Ab Turner done it. We're both here. Then the old man turns towards the king and says, Perhaps this gentleman can tell me what was tattooed on his breast. Blamed if the king didn't have to brace up mighty quick, or he'd have squashed down like a bluff bank that the river is cut under, it took him so sudden. And mind you, it was a thing that was calculated to make most anybody squash to get fetched such a solid one as that without any notice. Because how was he going to know what was tattooed on the man? He whitened a little. He couldn't help it. And it was mighty still in there, and everybody bending a little forwards and gazing at him. Says I to myself, now he'll throw up the sponge. There ain't no more use. Well, did he? A body can't hardly believe it, but he didn't. I reckon he thought he'd keep the thing up till he tired them people out, so they'd thin out, and him and the Duke could break loose and get away. Anyway, he sat there, and pretty soon he begun to smile and says,
Oof! It's a very tough question, ain't it? Yes, sir, I can tell you what's tattooed on his breast. It's just a small, thin, blue arrow. That's what it is. And if you don't look close, you can't see it. Now what do you say, hey?
Well, I never seen anything like that old blister for clean out-and-out cheek. The new old gentleman turns brisk towards Ab Turner and his pard, and his eye lights up like he judged he'd got the king this time, and says,
There! You've heard what he said. Was there any such mark on Peter Wilkes' breast?
Both of them spoke up and says, We didn't see no such mark.
Good, says the old gentleman. Now what you did see on his breast was a small dim P and a B, which is an initial he dropped when he was young, and a W with dashes between them. So P-B-W.
And he marked them that way on a piece of paper.
Come, ain't that what you saw?
Both of them spoke up again and says,
No, we didn't. We never seen any marks at all.
Well, everybody was in a state of mind now, and they sings out,
The whole bilin' of 'em's frauds. Let's duck 'em. Let's drown 'em. Let's ride 'em on a rail.
And everybody was whooping at once, and there was a rattling powwow. But the lawyer, he jumps on the table and yells and says,
Gentlemen, gentlemen, hear me just a word. Just a single word, if you please. There's one way yet. Let's go and dig up the corpse and look.
That took them.
Hooray!
They all shouted, and was starting right off. But the lawyer and the doctor sung out,
Hold on! Hold on! Collar all these four men and the boy, and fetch them along, too. We'll do it!
They all shouted.
And if we don't find them marks, we'll lynch the whole gang.
I was scared now, I tell you. But there weren't no getting away, you know. They gripped us all and marched us right along, straight for the graveyard, which was a mile and a half down the river, and the whole town at our heels, for we made noise enough and it was only 9 in the evening. As we went by our house, I wished I hadn't sent Mary Jane out of town, because now if I could tip her the wink, she'd light out and save me and blow on our deadbeats. Well, we swarmed along down the river road, just carrying on like wildcats, and to make it more scary, the sky was darkening up, and the lightning beginning to wink and flitter, and the wind to shiver amongst the leaves. This was the most awful trouble and most dangersome I ever was in, and I was kinder stunned, Everything was going so different from what I'd allowed for. Instead of being fixed so I could take my own time if I wanted to, and see all the fun, and have Mary Jane at my back to save me and set me free when the close fit come. Here was nothing in the world betwixt me and sudden death but just them tattoo marks. If they didn't find them, I couldn't bear to think about it, and yet, somehow, I couldn't think about nothing else. It got darker and darker, and it was a beautiful time to give the crowd the slip, but that big husky had me by the wrist, Hines, and a body might as well try to give Goliath the slip. He dragged me right along, he was so excited, and I had to run to keep up. When they got there, they swarmed into the graveyard and washed over it like an overflow. And when they got to the grave, they found they had about 100 times as many shovels as they wanted, but nobody hadn't thought to fetch a lantern. But they sailed into digging anyway, by the flicker of the lightning, and sent a man to the nearest house a 1/2 mile off to borrow one. So they dug and dug like everything, and it got awful dark, and the rain started, and the wind swished and swashed along, and the lightning come brisker and brisker, and the thunder boomed. But them people never took no notice of it. They was so full of this business. And 1 minute you could see everything in every face in that big crowd, and the shovelfuls of dirt sailing up out of the grave. And the next second the dark wiped it all out, and you couldn't see nothing at all. At last they got out the coffin and begun to unscrew the lid. And then such another crowding and shouldering and shoving as there was to scrouge in and get a sight you never see. And in the dark that way it was awful. Hines, he hurt my wrist dreadful, pulling and tugging so, and I reckon he clean forgot I was in the world, he was so excited and panting. All of a sudden the lightning let go a perfect sluice of white glare, and somebody sings out, "By the living jingo! Here's the bag of gold on his breast!" Hines let out a whoop like everybody else and dropped my wrist and give a big surge to bust his way in and get a look. And the way I lit out and shin for the road in the dark, there ain't nobody can tell. I had the road all to myself and fairly flew. Leastways, I had it all to myself except the solid dark and the now and then glares and the buzzing of the rain and the thrashing of the wind and the splitting of the thunder. And sure as you are born, I did clip it along. When I struck the town, I see there weren't nobody out in the storm, so I never hunted for no back streets, but humped it straight through the main one. And when I begun to get towards our house, I aimed my eye and said it. No light there, the house all dark. Which made me feel sorry and disappointed, I didn't know why. But at last, just as I was sailing by, flash comes the light in Mary Jane's window. And my heart swelled up sudden like to bust. And the same second, the house and all was behind me in the dark and wasn't ever going to be before me no more in this world. She was the best girl I ever see and had the most sand. The minute I was far enough above the town to see I could make the towhead, I begun to look sharp for a boat to borrow. And the first time the lightning showed me one that wasn't chained, I snatched it and shoved. It was a canoe, and weren't fastened with nothing but a rope. The towhead was a rattling big distance off, away out there in the middle of the river, but I didn't lose no time. And when I struck the raft at last, I was so fagged I would have just laid down to blow and gasp if I could afforded it. But I didn't. As I sprung aboard, I sung out, "Out with you, Jim, and set her loose! Glory be to goodness, we're shut of them!" Jim lit out and was a-coming for me with both arms spread. He was so full of joy. But when I glimpsed him in the lightning, my heart shot up in my mouth, and I went overboard backwards. For I forgot he was old King Lear and a drowned Arab all in one, and it most scared the livers and lights out of me. But Jim fished me out and was going to hug me and bless me and so on. He was so glad I was back and we was shut of the king and the duke. But I says, "Now, now, have it for breakfast, have it for breakfast. Cut loose and let her slide." So in 2 seconds away we went, a-sliding down the river, and it did seem so good to be free again and all by ourselves on the big river and nobody to bother us. I had to skip around a bit and jump up and crack my heels a few times. I couldn't help it. But about the 3rd crack, I noticed a sound that I knowed mighty well and held my breath and listened and waited. And sure enough, when the next flash busted out over the water, here they come. And just a laying to their oars and making their skiff hum, it was the King and the Duke. So I wilted right down onto the planks then and give up. And it was all I could do to keep from crying. Chapter 30. When they got aboard, the King went for me and shook me by the collar and says,
"Trying to give us the slip, was you, you pup? Tired of our company, hey?"
I says, "No, Your Majesty, we weren't. Please don't, Your Majesty."
"Quick, then, and tell us what was your idea, or I'll shake the insides out of you."
"Honest, I'll tell you everything, just as it happened, Your Majesty. The man that had a hold of me was very good to me, and kept saying he had a boy about as big as me that died last year, and he was sorry to see a boy in such a dangerous fix. And when they was all took by surprise by finding the gold, and made a rush for the coffin, he lets go of me and whispers, 'Heel it now, or they'll hang you, sure.' And I lit out. It didn't seem no good for me to stay. I couldn't do nothing, and I didn't want to be hung if I could get away. So I never stopped running till I found the canoe. And when I got here, I told Jim to hurry, or they'd catch me and hang me yet, and said I was afeard you and the Duke wasn't alive now, and I was awful sorry. And so was Jim, and was awful glad when we see you coming. You may ask Jim if I didn't.' Jim said it was so, and the King told him to shut up and said,
'Oh, yes, it's mighty likely,'
and shook me up again and said he reckoned he'd drown me. But the Duke says, 'Let go the boy, you old idiot. Would you have done any different? Did you inquire around for him when you got loose? I don't remember it.' So the King let go of me and begun to cuss that town and everybody in it. But the Duke says, 'You better a blame sight give yourself a good cussin', for you're the one that's entitled to it most. You ain't done a thing from the start that had any sense in it, except coming out so cool and cheeky with that imaginary blue arrow mark. That was bright. It was right down bully, and it was the thing that saved us. For if it hadn't been for that, they'd have jailed us to them Englishmen's baggage come, and then the penitentiary, you bet. But that trick took 'em to the graveyard, and the gold done us a still bigger kindness. For if the excited fools hadn't let go all holts, and made that rush to get a look, we'd have slept in our cravats tonight. Cravats warranted to wear, too, longer than we'd need 'em.' They was still a minute, thinking. Then the King says, kind of absent-minded like, 'Oomph, and we reckon the nigger stole it.' That made me squirm. 'Yes,' says the Duke, kind of slow and deliberate and sarcastic, 'we did.' After about a half a minute, the King draws out, 'Leastways, I did.' The Duke says the same way, 'On the contrary, I did.' The King kind of ruffles up and says, 'Looky here, Bilgewater, what are you referring to?' The Duke says, pretty brisk, 'When it comes to that, maybe you'll let me ask, what was you referring to?'
'Shucks,' says the King, very sarcastic, 'but I don't know. Maybe you was asleep and didn't know what you was about.'
The Duke bristles right up now and says,
'Oh, let up on this cussed nonsense. Do you take me for a blame fool? Don't you reckon I know who hid that money in that coffin?' 'Yes, sir. I know you do know, because you've done it yourself.' 'It's a lie.'
And the Duke went for him. The King sings out,
'Take your hands off! Let go my throat! I take it all back!'
The Duke says, 'Well, you just own up first that you did hide that money there, intending to give me the slip one of these days and come back and dig it up and have it all to yourself.'
'Wait just a minute, Duke. Answer me this one question, honest and fair. If you didn't put the money there, say it, and I'll believe you. And take back everything I said.'
'You old scoundrel, I didn't, and you know I didn't. There now.'
'Well then, I believe you. But answer me only just this one more. Now don't get mad. Didn't you have it in your mind to hook the money and hide it?
The Duke never said nothing for a little bit. Then he says,
Well, I don't care if I did. I didn't do it anyway. But you not only had it in mind to do it, but you done it. I wished I may never die if I'd done it, Duke, and that's honest. I won't say I weren't going to do it, because I was. But you, I mean somebody, got in ahead of me. It's a lie. You done it, and you got to say you done it, or...
The king begun to gurgle, and then he gasps out,
Nah! I own up!
I was very glad to hear him say that. It made me feel much more easier than what I was feeling before. So the Duke took his hands off and says,
If you ever deny it again, I'll drown you. It's well for you to sit there and blubber like a baby. It's fitting for you, after the way you've acted. I never see such an old ostrich for wanting to gobble everything. And I trusting you all the time like you was my own father. You ought to be ashamed of yourself to stand by and hear it saddled on to a lot of poor niggers and you never say a word for 'em. It makes me feel ridiculous to think I was soft enough to believe that rubbish. Cuss you, I can see now why you was so anxious to make up the deficit. You wanted to get what money I'd got out of the Nonesuch and one thing or another and scoop it all.
The king says, timid, and still a-snuffling,
Why, Duke, it was you that said make up the deficit. It warn't me. Dry up. I don't want to hear no more out of you, says the Duke. And now you see what you got by it. They've got all their own money back, and all of ourn but a shekel or two besides. Go long to bed, and don't you deficit me no more deficits long's you live.
So the king sneaked into the wigwam and took to his bottle for comfort. And before long, the Duke tackled his bottle, and so in about a half an hour, they was thick as thieves again. And the tighter they got, the lovinger they got, and went off a-snoring in each other's arms. They both got powerful mellow, but I noticed the king didn't get mellow enough to forget to remember to not deny about hiding the money bag again. That made me feel easy and satisfied. Of course, when they got to snoring, we had a long gabble, and I told Jim everything. Chapter 31 We dasn't stop again at any town for days and days, kept right along down the river. We was down south in the warm weather now, and a mighty long ways from home. We begun to come to trees with Spanish moss on them, hanging down from limbs like long gray beards. It was the first I ever see it growing, and it made the woods look solemn and dismal. So now the frauds reckon they was out of danger, and they begun to work the villages again. First they done a lecture on temperance, but they didn't make enough for them both to get drunk on. Then in another village they started a dancing school, but they didn't know no more how to dance than a kangaroo does. So the first prance they made, the general public jumped in and pranced them out of town. Another time they tried to go at yellocution, but they didn't yellocute long till the audience got up and gave them a solid good cussing and made them skip out. They tackled missionarying and mesmerizing and doctoring and telling fortunes and a little of everything, but they couldn't seem to have no luck. So at last they got just about dead broke and laid around the raft as she floated along, thinking and thinking and never saying nothing by the half a day at a time, and dreadful blue and desperate. And at last they took a change and begun to lay their heads together in the wigwam and talk low and confidential 2 or 3 hours at a time. Jim and me got uneasy. We didn't like the look of it. We judged they was studying up some kind of worse deviltry than ever. We turned it over and over, and at last we made up our minds they was going to break into somebody's house or store, or was going into the counterfeit money business or something. So then we was pretty scared, and made up an agreement that we wouldn't have nothing in the world to do with such actions, and if we ever got the least show, we would give them the cold shake and clear out and leave them behind. Well, early one morning, we hid the raft in a good safe place about 2 miles below a little bit of a shabby village named Pikesville, and the king, he went ashore, and told us all to stay hid whilst he went up to town and smelt around to see if anybody had gotten the wind of the Royal Nonsuch there yet. "House to rob, you mean," says I to myself, "and when you get through robbing, you'll come back here and wonder what's become of me and Jim and the raft, and you'll have to take it out in wondering." And he said if he weren't back by midday, the Duke and me would know it was all right, and we was to come along. So we stayed where we was. The Duke, he fretted and sweated around, and was in a mighty sour way. He scolded us for everything, and we couldn't seem to do nothing right. He found fault with every little thing. Something was a-brewing, sure. I was good and glad when midday come and no king. We could have a change, anyway, and maybe a chance for the change on top of it. So me and the Duke went up to the village and hunted around there for the king, and by we found him in the back room of a little low doggery, very tight, and a lot of loafers bully-ragging him